Welcome to the Not Indies Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of Nine Eye Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining us. As I always say, subscribe to the channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@9eyecapitalgroup.com. Send us your questions, go to the website at www.9eyecapitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, engage, and also entertain. Today, we're talking to Andrea Kennedy, Wiser Wealth. Viva la France! We're talking tariff, taxes, and Trump. We're getting deep in the weeds today. Andrea, bienvenue. Allons-y. Let's get it. We are here, Andrea Kennedy, Wiser Wealth. Thank you for joining us. Are you in France right now?
I am in France. I'm actually
Viva la France. Viva la France, huh?
I've been studying some French, but also I've been I'm going to go on a long walk, a long Camino. So that's part of my reason to be here.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into my eighth grade French. Again, like I said, I've como va tu, and you're going to say, I'm just going to respond, como si, como sa. That's all I do.
You know, I've learned a few languages, and I'm confusing them all, so everything kind of works for me.
Oh, man, French and Spanish are almost like intertwined to a degree. It's like, exactly. It's very difficult to like, because you can kind of go back and forth really easily, and it's very interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know what? We have a lot of stuff going on right now.
That's true. I was going to say, it's almost hard to know from day to day where to start. Like, it's like pin the tail on the crazy thing that's happening. So,
oh my gosh. So we're going to focus on policy, right? So we don't want to get political, and we'll try not to. I understand it's very difficult sometimes, but we're going to refocus more on policy, because the last thing I want is a bunch of just bots coming on our platform and just beating us up over, oh, you said this and all. Even if they do, I don't really care. But let's just really get down to the nitty gritty. I mean, the market's down double digits in a matter of weeks. A lot of people say it's self-inflicted. A lot of people saying this is uncalled for, unnecessary. You have a macro view of all of these things, and I appreciate you joining us right now. But
so can I just address what you just said? I think that we're at the end of a cycle, and I think this particular cycle was going to end regardless of who was president.
Okay.
I think it's going to end how it's going to end in a specific way because of potentially who's president. But I think, and because of the, because of who's in Congress and because of the legislation with tax and everything, tax cuts that are being passed. So I think this was always going to come to an end. And as in the middle of last year, for my clients, I already started to position them out of a lot of the hot U.S. equity into way before the election, more overseas, into some commodities, into gold. So me and my clients have been doing that for a long time, because I just felt like, oh, this is kind of the end of this run. It just kind of felt like it was that time.
Okay.
So just so you know, that's kind of, we were doing this way before the tariffs and before all this kind of stuff came up. So you
mentioned, and this is, we're going to go a bunch of different directions. You mentioned end of cycle. What do you mean by end of cycle? Are you meaning by the cycle of inflation, the cycle of monetary easing? Like, what cycle are you referring to?
So I think we're going to go back a little bit in history.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think in some ways the cycle ended in 2020, all right, with COVID. Think about it. That was a good 10-year run, 10, 11-year run. So that's a pretty normal run for our markets, right, where you've got kind of a bull market. 10 years is pretty normal. Then we had COVID, and then U.S. policy shifted, and it became very anti-China, friend-shoring, the Biden administration and the Congress that went along with Biden, which was all bipartisan. Mm-hmm. They was all about bringing investment into America. That was very new. That was kind of different, right? The CHIPS Act, the infrastructure, everything kind of happened at once, right? Which in a way created inflation. So I think the cycle kind of ended in 2020. It got extended a bit through the Biden administration. And now we've had this resultant inflation that now we have voted against as a country, essentially. Mm-hmm. And now we've got a new guy in and a new Congress. And now they want, it's not enough just a friend show. It's not enough. They want to really quite significantly change how we function as an economy, right? And mm-hmm. and who we are doing, and who we're doing trade and deals with. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this maybe ended in 2020 and the kind of Bretton Woods stuff started to break down. Biden came in, you kind of had an extension. People, you know, we were selling energy big, you know, so there was this new kind of burst of activity. And now this is kind of ground to a halt, or it's at least ground to a standstill.
Okay.
So this is why kind of at the end of Biden, I was thinking, like, how much longer can this go on? Like, how much longer can we have a stock market run? We had 2 years in a row that were, what, 25% up after the bank crash in 22. You know, so it was like, I was thinking, how long can this go on? So to me, I'm 60. So this felt like, okay, I've seen a few of these things. And this was kind of, it felt like it was coming to an end anyway, in terms of our stock market run. Okay.
Well, it just depends on how much longer you can throw gas on the fire. Like, the party keeps coming, and you have Jerome Powell, you have all the Fed presidents keep just, here's more alcohol for everybody to stay a little bit longer, right? So they can keep reflating. I don't know. It's just interesting to me. I like that point of view. You know, so I want your opinion on this, because I love what you do on LinkedIn. You're powerful. You have a great voice, and I think people really truly listen to what you're saying. I did a Substack a couple of days ago, and I said, what if Trump was 100% right? Now I said, what if he's 100% right? The reshoring, because we saw what happened during the pandemic, PPE, we couldn't get it. Chips, we can't get them. So the supply chain disruption, I understand where they're coming from. Now, do I agree with the method that they're doing it? Absolutely not. But I understand the concept. Now, But what I said was in the article, I said, well, even if he's 100% right, it wouldn't matter. I can have the cure for cancer, but if no one agrees with me, it doesn't matter. So if you don't have business owners, if you don't have consumers, investors believing in what you're saying, even if you're 100% correct, will it ever come to fruition? What is your stance on that?
Well, let's just take this argument that this is the correct way to be doing things, mm-hmm. right? The correct approach for now, that we have to be doing all this stuff onshore and so on. Mm-hmm. To me, it's not just, are you right? It's how are you doing things, right?
Yeah.
It's in which way are you doing things? To me, what is strange is this need to have this happen so quickly and so in some ways violently, right?
Yeah.
I wonder why, you know, and I don't have answers, and it's not a critique of, but I do wonder why. That is always in the back of my head. Why is this happening so quickly? In other words, you could have done this reshoring. Let's call it reshoring for lack of a better word.
Yeah, yeah.
You could have done this reshoring, and you could have done it over time. You could have started with the most important things, right? Which are not like socks or, you know, like a bag, you know, like a purse or a brush. Like, all this stuff is, you go through your house. 99% of it's going to be made somewhere else.
Yes.
So my big question is, even if it's right, what's the rush right now? Like, what is going on that we're not aware of, right? And that's partly why, you know, people are moving into gold, because I'm not just thinking that, and you're not just thinking that. Other people are also wondering, what is this mad rush, right? So I think that's my question. I think it makes sense to bring certain things home. Absolutely. Why we've waited so long is completely beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's 4 or 5 or 6 or probably 10 categories of things that we probably should have here. Mm-hmm. But a lot of this stuff we don't need to make here, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the other truth. So I just wish we were being a little bit more maybe methodical. And then it's easier to get people to join you, right? Because you're explaining it to them. It's not just, I'm just going to blow everything up. I mean, that's a bit, in a way, kind of a little immature, right? You would have to say it's a little like, why are we doing it this way, right? So that's my query to this conversation is how we're doing it, not what we're doing.
It's equivalent to the kid on the block that when you were playing, like all the kids would get gathering around, but there's that one kid that had all the toys, they had the balls and everything like that. And you were like, he would only play because he had the equipment, you know? And then, hey, he strikes out and he wants to take his ball home. Well, the game is over. So that's how we're acting right now.
And I think how this relates to people's portfolios is, you know, when people see people fleeing our bond market, our government bond market, yeah. it is probably a reaction to not the what, but the how. That's my guess. I'd have to guess, right? People get very nervous, right? Because they don't know. And we are changing our story a little bit from week to week, right? So this also is like, if we could kind of just stick with the story, you know, like if someone's accused of a crime and they keep changing their story, you know they're guilty. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit like, if we could just stick with a story, then it's also easier for investors to invest, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier for investors to invest in bonds. It's easier for investors to invest in. And the thing that's going on in the background is congressional legislation. We know there's tax cuts. We know we're adding to the deficit, but we don't also know what else is in there, right? Because it's not been fully passed into law. So we're kind of waiting around.
Yeah. I've been reading the continuing resolutions, and I send it through my AI and I say, hey, what is it saying here? What is it saying here? I try to be ahead of all of that stuff, because the one thing I don't want to do is watch some news network tell me what I'm thinking, you know? So I'll just say, let me go grab the bill. Let me see exactly what's in it first. And then let me make my own decisions.
Right.
And
right.
Like they're talking about $959.9 billion of interest payments this year. I'm like, well, the bond market's not saying that. The bond market said, I think it's going to be a little bit higher than that. $13.1 trillion over the next decade. You got to refinance. I think it's going to be a little higher than that.
Yeah.
But what you mentioned earlier about why are they doing so much so fast is because that's the tactic that they ran on. And they called flooding the zone. They're just going to flood them, you know? And you don't know what to do anymore. You're like, should I take care of this? Should I take care of this? And it's just their tactic. And I think it's working, but to the detriment of just confusion, in my opinion. But it's insane. Yeah.
So it's hard to know. So I don't, you know, I think that this, that there's a lot to be said for bringing kind of critical things back to the United States. Right. I just think there's a way to kind of get more people on board and to have slightly less confusion. And then that makes it easier to invest, right?
You don't want to pay $3,000 for an iPhone? You don't
want
to pay?
I don't even want an iPhone anymore.
That's true. I don't blame you. They're starting to do some things that are kind of creepy. Like a couple of days ago, they shut down my wife's SIM card. Oh, you're going to have to upgrade your device. Oh, interesting. Interesting. I see how you're doing it. It's annoying, but how much money is enough? I'm a capitalist. I get it. But golly, guys, you're worth $3 trillion. How much is enough? I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. So we talked about like the cycle, the tightening cycles, the expansion of monetary policy. We saw Biden send out more and more stimulus, raising inflation. And now we have this tariff talk. That's my question to you. Are tariffs inflationary? I mean, they say it's a one-time hit to inflation. Are they truly inflationary?
So I believe that they are. I think a lot of the question is who's paying for it.
Yeah.
And the case for it is the importer. So China's not paying the tariff. I just want to make this as clear so people understand. But it's the company that's importing it. And they will then have either their margins squeezed or they will end up raising prices to compensate for that. Right. So that's kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to speculate on how much we're actually going to collect from this. I'm sure we'll collect some. I just don't know how much it is. But I know that the logic is, at least, that this payment that we're going to be collecting as a government is going to then offset these tax breaks. And I think that there is a bit of an incorrect math on that.
Yeah, 100%.
So there's other things, though, that they are talking about cutting. And I do want to raise this because this will matter for your clients' portfolios. I've heard, and again, this is just a rumor, a legislative rumor. It's not reality yet. But, you know, a lot of people invest in municipal bonds and that interest is tax exempt. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about taking that away.
Whoa,
so,
whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. I'm sure if you knew that. So
I have not heard that. Okay.
Okay. So I'm not saying they're going to do it, but that is something that is in play. Mortgage interest is also in play. So that's why this legislation is very interesting to me. I want to see who's getting tax cuts. I also want to see who and how people are going to be paying more if we are end up paying more as individuals. So
you mentioned, okay, so that goes back to my question. So we're talking about tax cuts, but then this is ultimately a tax hike, because I read somewhere a couple of days ago that this is a 23% to a 25% increase on effective tax rates for individuals, just regular everyday individuals, which is not necessarily a tax cut, which what they're saying it actually is in regards to just the TCJA expansion.
Right.
So
potentially, and that's why I keep saying we don't really know, and why I'm kind of hovering around the legislation like you, trying to understand what shape it's taking. But they're going to have something's going to have to give somewhere. And I just think we won't know until we're told. The thing that could come back, though, positive for us. You're familiar with the salt tax, the state.
Yeah, they're trying to raise the salt tax. Yeah.
So now they're trying to raise that. So there's ways that also, and I would expect that they wouldn't. I'm going to tell you why I think what will happen next.
Once, but we all know why they put it where it was, though, right? Yeah. I mean, blue states. That's,
right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I think they'll bring it back because that will support a housing cycle. And our economy really is a reflection of a housing cycle. And I think it would be great to have a housing cycle if we can get lower interest rates and you get home building, because we do need more homes. So if out of all of this can come slightly lower interest rates, kind of tax that favors home buying and particularly home building, I think that is something that could become, that could, we could leave this on a more positive foot, because, you know, home building creates a lot of jobs, right? And equity builds wealth and so on. So I think that could happen over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, but we know that the Federal Reserve doesn't control long-term interest rate. They control the short-term interest rate, right? So longer term, I mean, that's investors, that's foreign governments, that's us, the investors. So how can...
Are we going to get interest rates down?
without actually going in there and arbitrarily doing like open markets, like buying the treasuries down, like they did back in the early 2010s or 2020s. Over 20 teens, whatever that.
So I suspect that we will, I suspect, again, it's going back to something has to give. They want a lot of things. There's a lot of narratives that conflict. Mm-hmm. They want lower interest rates. They want bigger tax cuts. They want all these things actually conflict. Right. So I actually think we'll actually have some type of monetization of our debt. I think that will happen. And I think we'll have a devalued currency to some degree, right?
Okay.
And I think this is why Jerome Powell is not cutting rates yet. I think he's a little worried because we don't know what the tax legislation is. We don't know what the tariff legislation. He doesn't know what to do yet. So he's just sitting there saying, I'm not going to do anything until I know more. So I think this is what I mean. All these things will come to a head, I suspect, within the next year or so. And then I can come back on your show when it does. And we can figure out if I was right. But I think that that's what will happen, is I think we'll have a weaker currency and somehow find a way to lower rates. I'm not exactly sure how that all works, but I think that that could happen.
Well, I just know they artificially lowered rates back in the 2013s, 2012s, where they were just buying in the open market. They were just buying treasuries down, artificially keeping rates low, open up the housing market. People were able to do things. Now, I think it is important to open up the housing market because that'll allow for people to sell their homes and they don't have to double their rates, right? I mean, nobody wants to sell a 3% mortgage, you know? I mean, just obviously. So,
and we have a lot of young people. We have a lot of young people that are renting, and we keep talking about wanting these people to settle down and have families and have kids. But, you know, having a house that they own is in a lot of, psychologically for a lot of people, that's part of it. So I think creating a housing cycle off of this would probably be a very good thing.
As a tax professional, what I've learned recently is that if they want to spur marriage, and there's this marriage penalty in there. I'm not sure if people talk about it. Yeah, there's a marriage penalty in there where basically, if two people getting married, it's better for them to file separately because, if you start stacking income on top of your income, she's taxed at 24, or the spouse is taxed at 24, 28%. Exactly. Doesn't make any sense. So maybe they can fix those rules a little bit, right?
So I think there's a lot of tax changes that could be good and benefit and in line with just common sense. So hopefully that will be part of the changes that we see too, but it'll be a lot of changes, I think. So, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, so I guess so we're assuming that the Trump tax cuts get expanded, right? In their current form, there's no changes moving forward. So the expectation is, but I mean, I just don't understand how we're going to pay for it. People don't realize this. People don't realize that a tax cut under a deficit is you borrowing money that you have to pay back. And they think it's more money in my pocket. Well, you're just borrowing it, your own money. It's like, I don't get it.
Right. So you're raising a lot of good questions. And I think that this is why I keep referring back to the legislation that's coming. I think they're going to take away from individuals some of the benefits that we currently enjoy, such as municipal bond tax exemption. They could take away the exemption on interest on homes. So there's a lot of things that they can take away. Not a lot, but there's some things that still remain that they can take away. They've even talked about raising. I've even seen this in some article. Not recently, but I want to say a week ago. I'll send it to you. Mm-hmm. But it was about keeping or raising the highest end, the tax rates on the highest ends. Actually, really? keeping or raising. Okay. So I even saw that. So that's what I mean. I think that the reason that we have not yet seen any clarity is because they are also having this conversation in Congress. I think this is an ongoing conversation. Everyone's talking about the same thing. Yeah. Mm. And how do you reward companies for bringing stuff home? Like another example, when we enter into a type of trade war or trade standoff with a country like China, what ends up happening is China stops buying our agricultural goods. Uh-huh. Today, they announced they're going to stop buying Boeings. What our lobbies will do, what the ag lobby will do, is get supported by taxpayers when that happens.
100%. So
this is why it's kind of a little messy until there's clarity, right? And I think that's why we're not getting clarity yet, because too much is up in the air.
You just raised the point. And I get so angry about this, because in 2017, 2018, people disregard the fact that there were so many farmers that almost went bankrupt and they had to backfill them with $30 billion. And the money that they got in was nowhere near the $30 billion that we had to pay out as taxpayers.
Correct.
But it's good business. You know what? I'll let that go.
But these are things that we sell. So what we sell as a country is we sell ag, we sell energy, these are the big items, right?
Yeah.
We sell, and we sell planes, right? Those are the real big money spinners for us.
Yeah.
And so a trade war is really hard on those specific groups, frankly.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, I think over time things will be worked out. I think it's just that right now it's very uncomfortable because there's arrows that are going in a million different directions, but
yeah.
it's not even a maze. It's just like a lot of noise and it's hard to parse through. So I think we could pick up this conversation in maybe 2 months and have a different conversation.
Yeah, it'll be entirely different. Yeah. So let's go to investing right now. So you mentioned that you were far ahead of this. You were doing things for your clients well ahead of the election or the quote unquote, the changes in our government. So I guess my question is, how are you having these conversations right now? Are people worried, concerned? What do your conversations look like? Or sound.
So, and this is important. I said this before, but I want to make sure I say it again for your audience. A lot of my clients are not just living in the United States and they have options to invest outside of the U.S. markets. So, a lot of Americans don't. They're basically, have to buy into their 401k or whatever. So their options are sometimes more limited. Mm-hmm. A lot of my clients moved into commodities, everything from gold to metals. And I'm not a gold bug. I'm not a promoter of gold as a.
you want the buffalo coin?
But it kind of felt like about the right time for a lot of them. And a lot of them are Asian. So they have a longer history of gold and they have a longer memory of gold cycles. So for them, it felt like the right time. And so I started personally to pay attention to it. And I thought, okay, maybe they're onto something. I thought China had been beaten down so badly that we started to move money into certain Chinese equity that I like and that are really not part of this trade war thing, for lack of a better explanation. And then I could see through the Ukraine war that Europe was having a considering re-militarizing in their own ways. And so there were some opportunities there. And then there's Japan, which, again, is going through its own renaissance of sorts. So we kind of started to look in those locations, as well as holding on to things that I've always loved, like Berkshire Hathaway. I've held for a long time. I've always held on just because I love Warren Buffett. I fundamentally believe in his, how he approaches things. I like his approach. It's nice and calm. Mm-hmm. And then we started to move out of, it's funny, we started to move out of some equity that had, gained a lot, but not necessarily into bonds, because bonds just did not seem like they were acting normal, for lack of a better explanation. Right. And so we kind of maybe tiptoed into bonds, holding individual bonds, but did not go all in the way that one normally would at the end of a cycle. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm right there with you. I mean, I've been telling people this. I said, man, and it's not necessarily bonds, so to speak. It's more like the front end of the curve,
yep.
short duration. I'm just saying, man, I would, if I'm getting 4.5%, like 3, 6, 9, 12, maybe a year or 2 years, I'm okay with that. I know what my returns are. And of course, you know what? If they're telling me I'm going to get low to single digit returns in equities, okay, I'm getting 4% here in this bucket.
Why not?
Out risk. Oh, well, quote unquote risk, technical, you know, traditional risk. So yeah, I'd take that all day long.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, and you're doing what Warren Buffett's doing and what a lot of people are doing, which is they're just either in money market funds and they're getting 4.5, or they're on the short end of the curve. And, you know, if interest rates go up and there's the potential for that to happen, then you're going to capture a higher interest rate as interest rates go up. So it's a good place to be until, again, there's greater clarity in terms of what we're doing, right?
Well, yeah. And you mentioned clarity. And this is one area I think we all need to figure out if there's some clarity. The de-dollarization right now that's going on around the world. You have South American countries having direct conversations with China. You saw China going around doing their world tour right now, going around getting having partnerships, strategic partnerships with all these other countries. And what does that do? That means that they're transacting without the USD, and that's not a good thing for us. So talk to me a little bit about how we as Americans should we fear the de-dollarization of our global trade economy, or is that just something that's more just fear-mongering?
So I think there's maybe two or three parts to this, and I'm just going to address them separately because I think this could become a very confusing conversation. The first part is that China has built these relationships over a very, very long period of time, right? Because they want to sell stuff. That's their thing. If you think about it, China just wants to sell stuff and they want to build stuff. That's kind of how China thinks. So they are the largest trading partner to most countries now, to be very honest. So that's gone on for a very long time. That's not a recent phenomenon.
Yeah.
China very much enjoys the US dollar as the reserve currency because it's easy, right? And it's a system and they understand it. And they can, even when they get dollars, if they don't buy bonds, they can use the dollars that they make through trade and they can go buy something else. They can go buy iron ore from Chile or whatever. They can go buy soybeans from Brazil. So the dollar is a very useful trading currency. Mm-hmm. I think why people are talking about de-dollarization now is because there's been a move away from using the dollar by these trading partners who've accumulated a lot of dollars. They traditionally have bought our bonds with them, right? Mm-hmm. And that our interest rates low and so on. And now they're not buying new bonds. They're not stepping into the market in the same way, in the same amounts to buy our bonds, which means our interest rate is going up. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they want to have the dollar go away, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think there'll be a few steps before the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, but I think it's going to be the reserve currency for a while still, okay? So that's why I'm cautious about this whole de-dollarization stuff. I think it's kind of happening, but also not really. Yeah. So I don't think it's anything anyone really wants, but they also don't want to be held captive to just doing whatever we demand, right?
Yeah.
So I think they are looking for alternatives, right? And alternative ways of dealing with each other within the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I love how you put it. I mean, again, the reason why we're having this conversation, and by the way, is Andrea Kennedy, Wiser Wealth, and from France, from La France.
Right.
And just a couple more questions because I like to keep these short. What do you see? Okay, we all saw what happened to McKinley, right? I mean, unfortunate end, but he did. This is his playbook, right? You know, with tariffs and immigration and all this other stuff, and then Hoover tariffs and Coolidge and Hoover tariffs and immigration, and they all led to significantly lower. Less power in the government. I mean, both opportunities. So what do you think, and I want you to get in his head, but what do you think why do you think they think their outcome, the current administration's outcome is going to be different? Like, I mean, history's already proven to you that, hey, this is what happens. And now this current administration wants to use these policies. and thinking it's going to be different. Like, what's so different about it outside of saying, well, our economy is totally different. We're no longer industrial like we were. We're a totally different economy. We're service-based. So maybe it could be different. I don't know.
So I don't want to project. So you know, I have to just take a quick step back. I lived in Singapore for a lot of my adult life. Mm-hmm. The government came out and said, we're doing X, Y, and Z. They did X, Y, and Z. It was exactly like, it was very much what you were told was what happened, right?
Okay.
For better or for worse. We are often told things, it seems, in the United States, and then something else might happen, or there's another reason for it. And so we're being told a lot of things, but I don't really understand what's going on, to be honest, and who's benefiting. I think part of it is that you've got, and I grew up in the Midwest, and the Midwest has gone through a lot of this deindustrialization, right? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of job losses, and that happened from the beginning of Reagan. People don't realize, people always blame NAFTA, but it actually kicked off with Reagan, just so everybody's clear about the history. Mm-hmm. And what we didn't do as a country is step in and say, listen, all these guys are going to lose jobs. These communities are going to be hit. You know, they were like one company dependent communities. And there's all kinds of great books about this. And we should have stepped in and said, listen, they need to have their skills changed. They need to be warned. They need to have a different type of social support while they go through a transition. That's not what we do, really. That's what Germany does. That's what France does. Mm-hmm. It's really not what we do as a country. So I think that's where we drop the ball. And that's where we have been dropping the ball. And so I think now he's addressing these people who have felt left out of all of this wealth and growth over the last few years and who were left out of the loop. I do understand why he's addressing them. And I give credit to anyone who does. Bernie Sanders has as well, right? And that's why Bernie was popular during his run. So I think people and legislators have to address these people's grievances, but I think we also have to address them honestly, right? We cannot set expectations that there's going to be millions of jobs and there's only maybe 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 jobs. So my hope is that they actually have a plan behind the plan. Because otherwise you'll have just these people be unhappy again, right?
Yeah, I don't, in my opinion, I didn't want you to say the dreaded S word. You know that S word, socialism here in the United States.
S word, socialism?
Socialism, yeah, you said that Germany has it. I was like, uh-oh, don't say it too loud out here, because here come the bots.
Yeah, no, I know. But, you know, but I mean, if you go into any, I've lived in a bunch of different countries all over the world. I mean, they remove an industry or they, you know, an industry gets kind of downgraded or something happens to it. You know, you get robots doing the work, not humans. They understand that you've got to do something with those people, right? Otherwise, you get a lot of upset people, right? Who used to have skills that mattered. And then you have problems, social problems, right? So countries that plan understand this. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it has to be socialist or whatever. I'm saying countries that plan, and it's okay to plan a bit. There's nothing wrong with a little bit of planning. It doesn't have to be forever planning, but it has to be a little bit of planning.
You like to shoot from the hip? The Yosemite Sam stuff we got going on right now? Thank you for joining the 90s podcast. I appreciate this. This has been powerful. What? Give me one last word. Like if you were an investor during this time.
I know it.
Yeah.
What?
Be nimble. Be nimble, Jack be quick.
There it is. Be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jumped over the pogo stick or whatever they call it.
Candlestick, maybe.
Candlestick, pogo stick. I don't know. It's some kind of a stick. But thank you for joining the 90s podcast. I appreciate this. I love what you're doing on LinkedIn. Don't ever stop. Don't let the people, stay where you are because you're powerful. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because I think your voice needs to be heard.
Well, let's have another conversation once we know what the legislation looks like. Okay.
Well, I don't think they know what the legislation looks like. I'm just kidding. Thank you. Hey, enjoy your day from La France, and I appreciate you. And again, au revoir.
Au revoir. Merci beaucoup.
and merci beaucoup. Thank you for joining the show.
Thanks.
We just had Andrea Kennedy, Wiser Wealth, talked about the Trump administration, talked about tariffs, talked about taxes, talked about the de-dollarization, what's going on right now around the country, or around the globe, quote unquote. But very powerful conversation on the 90s podcast. Subscribe to the channel. Go and get my book, MLB to CFP, live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@noneyecapitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.noneyecapitalgroup.com. Schedule your appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, power, engage, and also entertain. Andrea Kennedy from La France, thank you for joining us. I want everybody to stay humble, stay safe. I'll see you again soon.